say that it was nice that it was the legal thing happened. You kind of gave it before, that afternoon, so I think that was helpful. I mean, I know that's not always the possibility and stuff, but I think that's always a great way to see two families living today, which we understand they're working family. When that's possible, I find that to be very respectful to the community.
Any other comments?
I'm sorry, I just thought, I would like to, if you're all okay with it, I'd like to send a notice home to parents, giving them this information on the school calendar so they have it in one place. I know it's on the calendar, but people miss it sometimes. So if you're okay with this, what I'd like to do is send home maybe a little blurb on how we make these decisions, and then a blurb on what the school calendar notes are, so that people have it in one place and understand the process. I know we got a few questions at the board office about how we make the decisions, and it's always good to kind of remind people what the process is.
I agree. Anything else? Okay, moving on, I'd like to open the floor for public comment section on agenda items only. When you come to the mic, please come, state your name and address, and please keep your comments to 3 minutes, as our bylaw 167 dictates how we run this section of the meeting. Anyone like to make some comments on agenda items only? No? Okay, I'd like to move on then to our first recognition of the public. This is for any topic, whether it's on the agenda or not on the agenda. Again, if you would like to come to the mic, please state your name and address. And again, please keep your comments to 3 minutes in respecting bylaw 167. Any comments? Okay. I'd like to then move on to our organizational resolutions, but before we go into those, I would like ask Dr. Clark to address the letter U in the resolutions for the organization, please.
Okay. In front of you, there is an updated organizational chart for the Clinton Township School District. And I wanted to revise this. Fortunately, Mr. McTiernan caught that we didn't have a vice principal on our organizational chart. And when I looked at that, I noticed a couple of other things that I felt were missing and that we had talked about in some of the committees over the course of the school year. And so I wanted to revise it and point it out to you as we voted on it, that I thought this was the time to address those changes. So if you notice, under the principal, I did add vice principal, because we do have one vice principal in the district. I also put under the director of curriculum and instruction, according to the job description, the supervisor of instruction reports to the director. So I wanted to add that in because that was not part of our organizational chart. And I wanted to make sure that our esteemed supervisor was included. I also made another change. And this came from some discussions in personnel committees and curriculum committees that we had way back when we were talking about these organizational charts. And if you look at the Director of Special Services, on the old chart, the CST and Student Services personnel reported to the Director of Special Services, and that's all that reported to the Director of Special Services. Teachers expressed some concerns about special education teachers have spoken to me about meetings with the Director of Special Services and making sure those were a regular part of what we do. And when we were hiring our new special services person, we discussed that in the interview process. And because of that and discussions we've had in personnel and curriculum, I wanted to make sure that we added in that special education teachers report clearly to the principals in their building. But I also wanted to have another place where they could also report to the director of special services, because a good director of special services really does a lot of work with the special education staff and supports instruction in their classrooms. So I wanted there to be that recognized on the organizational chart. So I added that in there. They clearly still report to the principals. I didn't change that, but I wanted to include the director of special services. It doesn't change anything really in the evaluation process, because the way we're evaluating now through the new evaluation process is the entire administrative staff is evaluating the entire teaching staff. So it doesn't change anything there. But I wanted to make sure that as a new special services director came into the district, they were meeting regularly with the special education teachers, and that was part of their responsibility in terms of instruction and what was happening in those classrooms. And I wanted that to be a shared responsibility, that it was not only the principals who work on that the director of special services does that. So I presented that for your consideration tonight as we look at that organizational chart.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
The line that has the director of curriculum and instruction and supervisor of instruction, shouldn't that be aligned to the other side of the principals, which is connected to the instructional staff, to the OC staff as well?
Yes, I think we can do that.
Can you say that again, please, Rachel?
The line that has the director of curriculum instruction and the supervisor of instruction, if you flip them to the left side of where the principals column, then the line can be connected to the instructional staff, because they directly oversee the staff as well.
So just take those two boxes and move them.
Yeah.
Down.
I got it.
Yeah, go here.
Right. Yep. So the supervisor of instruction is also supervising instructional staff, correct? Sorry, Tim.
But where are the TAs? Are they in student support services?
Yes, but they're also, if you look at it, special education instructional staff, certificated and non-certificated.
So they would fall under.
Yes.
And then what? How do you define the student support services?
Well, that's usually things like ESL, nursing.
Therapists?
Yes.
Speech. Yeah.
OTPT.
Occupational therapists, physical therapists, that kind of thing.
I have a question. I think there's a bylaw or policy that has this chart in it. So I think we have to visit updating that. And I don't know if it has to go through a first read, second read again. But if we could just check to make sure that this matches that, that would be great.
I'm sorry.
Guidance. Where does that fall?
Yeah, that would fall under that as well.
So we now have a new chart that was different than was originally presented to the board. Originally, we were going to move items A through AB all at once. You haven't done anything just yet, but can you help direct us in how now maybe we have a friendly amendment here at what point in time, and walk us through that, please?
So I would maybe do that one separately, and then you can allow to explain what the change is and prove it subject to those changes.
Okay. So
you?
Yep. So I'd like to look for a motion for organizational resolution U.
No, no? You do, I think you do, is it F through?
Well, she said to do that one separate.
Yeah, you do, the others first, except you.
Okay.
And then do you after that.
Okay, all right. Okay. So we'll go back to that in a moment. We do have a series of organizational resolutions to vote on tonight. And what I'd like to do first is focus on a letter F, which is the Code of Ethics. And according to law, Mrs. Spitzer needs to read that to us.
Let's do the motion, open the motion and second to put the motions on the floor. Okay. And then we'll proceed.
We have to do this one separate because you're reading it. No? Okay. I'd like to look for a motion, please, for letter F through
AB.
Excluding you. Thank you.
Motion.
Second? So I ask for a motion from letter F
right.
to AB excluding you.
No, we'll have a discussion.
We're going to have a discussion. We're just having a motion to open the discussion.
Do we have a second?
Second? Anyone?
Also.
Kevin Sturgis?
And now comments.
Okay, now comments. Any comments? Yep, Mrs. Spitzer, could you please read the Code of Ethics, please?
Code of Ethics, in accordance with Bylaw 0142, Code of Ethics, the Board of Education shall discuss the member Code of Ethics annually at a regular scheduled public meeting. Each member shall sign documentation that he or she has received a copy of it and has read it and understood it. At each of your chairs this evening was the Code of Ethics for recognition and signature, and I will read the Code of Ethics. NJSA 18A:12-24.1 Code of Ethics for School Board Members. A school board member shall abide by the following Code of Ethics for School Board Members. A, I will uphold and enforce all laws, rules, regulations of the State Board of Education and court orders pertaining to schools. Desired changes shall be brought about only through legal and ethical procedures. B, I will make decisions in terms of the educational welfare of children and will seek to develop and maintain public schools that meet the individual needs of all children, regardless of their ability, race, creed, sex, or social standing. C, I will confine my board action to policymaking, planning, and appraisal, and I will help to frame the policies and plans only after the board has consulted those who will be affected by them. D, I will carry out my responsibility not to administer the schools, but together with my fellow board members to see that they are well run. E, I will recognize that authority rests with the Board of Education and will make no personal promises nor take any private action that may compromise the board. F, I will refuse to surrender my independent judgment to special interest or partisan political groups or to use the schools for personal gain or for the gain of friends. G, I will hold confidential all matters pertaining to the schools which, if disclosed, would needlessly injure individuals or the schools. In all other matters, I will provide accurate information and, in concert with my fellow board members, interpret to the staff the aspirations of the community for the school. H, I will vote to appoint the best qualified personnel available for consideration of the recommendations of the chief administrative officer. I will support and protect school personnel in proper performance of their duties. J, I will refer all complaints to the chief administrative officer and will act on the complaints at public meetings only after failure of an administrative solution. No, they're all together.
Any questions?
I just want to make sure I understand. F has a separate motion and a second. AA has a separate motion and a second. And AB has a separate motion and a second. We're bulking in these ones, is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, everything was moved from F forward to AB, except you.
Oh, okay. Just want to make sure that...
You, the letter U.
Right.
Yes.
Because it shows different on the agenda, I just want to make sure that... Okay.
On the code of ethics, this is the last one, J. The chief administrative officer, is that the superintendent or the president?
It would be the superintendent.
Any other questions? Have a roll call vote, please, then, on letter A through AB without the letter U.
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
And Mrs. Verderama?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Okay, now I'd like to seek a motion to move the letter U in the friendly amendment with the changes that Dr. Clark and others have outlined in our organizational chart. So I'm looking for a motion to move that with a friendly amendment, please. Dan McTiernan. Second?
Second.
Rachel McLaughlin? Roll call. Right.
Any questions or comments?
Any questions or comments?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderama?
Yes.
And Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Okay, I'd like to move this meeting on to the report of the school business administrator, Mrs. Spitzer.
This evening we have Mr. William Colitano, our board auditor, here to review the audit results and to go over the MD&A, which is the management discussion and analysis. And as part of this report, we will also approve the comprehensive annual financial report, which is you will hear referred to as the CAFR, for the year ended June 30th, 2013, as well as any corrective action plan. We currently do not have any recommendations. Our next Board of Education meeting will be on Monday, January 27th at 7:30 in the middle school auditorium. And that's, if Mr. Colitano would please review the report with us. Thank you.
Good evening, all. I have my usual handouts. Before I get started, I usually indicate that the audit's over 100 pages. Most of the pages are useless. They're in the state requirement as far as presentation. The exhibits that are in here are based on what the state requires. I indicate that they're useless in a lot of cases, but there are an awful lot of exhibits in here that are important for the board members to be aware of. And what I attempt to do when I do make my presentation is to identify those exhibits and also pick out things that I think are really relevant to the board. A handout that I've given. The first exhibit is the audit exhibit B2, which is, and I'll refer to it as commercial bank as your profit and loss statement for the year. What I do with this particular exhibit is I take it, I modify it, I put percentages to it, and I compare it to last year's B2. And I try to identify things that stand out and that the board should be aware of. More than likely they are, but I do want to bring them to your attention because they are extraordinary in many cases. The most important thing, if you want to look at it, is your tax levy last year. Actually, it went in the wrong direction. It went down. There was a decrease in total tax levy to the citizens of Clinton Township of $100,000. As I indicated, it's contrary to the most. Everybody else is going up a little bit, not much, but yours went in the opposite direction. It went down in the year 2012-13. What it really meant was that a person who owned a $100,000 home, which is unheard of in Clinton Township, saved $4.55 in real estate taxes because of the decrease. Other items that were unique, if you will. If you look at the state aid item where I'm showing on the revenues, there's an increase of $971,000, primarily from school choice aid that the township is now receiving. Last year, you received $1,283,000 in school choice aid, compared to the preceding year, $640,000. Other increases were extraordinary aid and transportation aid, which was a new aid to Clinton Township received last year. Never before did you receive the transportation aid. There was, if you look at the state aid increases also where it says Omni half benefits, I just left another meeting indicating that the state likes to take credit for increases in revenue that they're giving you, but do not take credit for expenditures. The Omni half payments are not monies that you actually receive, but the monies that are expended at the state level on behalf of Clinton Township. Last year, for the first time that I can remember, the state finally made a pension payment to the Future Pension Annuity Fund, but previously to that there were no payments made on behalf of Clinton Township teachers. That's the primary reason for the increase there. There's also an offsetting increase in expenditures in an equal amount. But again, the state takes credit for it, but it's burdening your expenditures. There was a decrease in federal aid for jobs money, which was a one-shot revenue source. And there was a decrease in federal aid for special revenue fund. Not because you didn't receive it, it just wasn't expended by June 30th. The federal year goes through August 31st. I think the most important thing to look at on this particular handout is the expenditures, what happened last year. My page is all marked up. I have on the right-hand side many VGs, which means very good. If you look at the expenditure increases and decreases, last year shows a true reflection of what the board administration is attempting to do here as far as keeping costs under control. There were a couple of areas that we did show increases, and the two increases that I identified, this tuition for the special needs students, and there's an offsetting increase also in pupil transportation for special education. Those are items you really have no control over. But there were increases that impacted your operation last year. And another item that stands out is a $506,000 increase in capital expenditures. That was intentional. And that I would not consider to be abnormal as far as the operations of the school district, only because it's the intent of the board to maintain their facilities. We're showing a $505,000 increase. But if you look, the biggest bulk of your increase is where that one item. So that was something that was definitely intentional by the board.
And that was also one of your recommendations last year, supposed to increase that item.
This is actually an expenditure, not a reserve. Last year you recommended we increase our reserve.
Right.
Yes. This was the roof at Spruce.
Reserves. It's the surplus analysis, which is the second page of the handout. I've modified this a little bit based on last year's presentation, because it's quite involved in how you calculate the various reserves that the school district has. The total surpluses last year for the PC are almost exactly the same as the allocation is over this year. If you look at, and if you remember prior years, I indicate how much money you have in surplus, and I proceed to take it all away from you as far as what you're allowed to spend for operation. A key item is the items that we refer to now as committed balances. Is the capital reserve. This year, you ended up the year with $1,222,000 of committed capital reserve money, which can only be used for capital purposes. That's a substantial increase over the preceding year, about $750,000. The reason why that balance is important is the cost to the taxpayer in the future. You have the money in your pocket right now. You don't have to worry about going to the taxpayers for referendum questions or anything of that nature. Also, with the state allowing now additional funding to the district at 40% share, the million two is 60% of a total package of, I can't do it in my head any longer, about probably about $1.8 million in capital expenditures. Because you have that kind of money set aside. The maintenance reserve is specifically what it says. It can only be used for maintenance items within the district. We have excess surpluses, none at the end of this year compared to last year's small amount, $81,000. But the $81,000 from last year is included in the 13-14 budget in the area of tax relief. The unassigned free balance is made up of the numbers that I'm reflecting at the bottom. Almost the bottom 1/4 of the page is the free balance calculation, which is based on expenditures. You're allowed to have $515,000 based on the size of the school district. Based on actual expenditures from the preceding year. You would have what they call free balance exceptions. $19,000 for non-public transportation money and also extraordinary aid of $309,000. The reason why I call that exception to the rule is that the state of New Jersey, because of the revenue that comes into the district at the end of the year, usually in June, so you cannot react. They say we're going to let you use that money any way you want without asking permission from the state. The people who have their audit exhibits, their document, C1 exhibit on page 53, I want to highlight this for a particular reason. again, I just left another district. The state of New Jersey indicates that they fund education 65%. The only problem is that's the entire state of New Jersey, but not each individual town. In your particular case, I'm just pulling some information out of this exhibit. Taxes in Clinton Township have averaged, as far as the amount of money needed to support your budget, around 95%. Last year, the 2013 year, that dropped to about 87%, primarily because of the state bringing in the school choice aid to the district. But I also indicated to the previous board that I just left, the timing of your budget is very unique. Basically, what happens in any school district, I used to be a board member, I don't envy what you're about to do as far as that going through the budget process now. You're doing a budget in January and February for school year. Your technical start of the school year is July 1st. Really, it starts September. And the time that it takes between the two events, many, many changes can occur. So you've been lucky in this past year. You ended up with a savings of about 4% on your total budget. There will be years where that's going to go in reverse. We're talking about the extended school year, possibly because of the weather. If you based your fuel oil costs based on the last couple of years, the mild winters, that may not occur this year. So the money that we have for last year's budget may not be sufficient as far as the operations of the budget this year. When you compare what you're doing to a municipality, they will adopt your budget in April for the year that starts January 1st. A good part of their expenditures are known already as far as snow removal, costs such of that nature. So when they know what the total costs are, that's what their budget's going to be. You don't know. It's a difficult job being a school board member preparing a budget. Other pages. The third page of my handout is the J4 exhibit. Now, the J4 exhibit is 10 years worth of revenues and expenditures. And what I do with this particular exhibit is I pick out the middle 8 years to see what's happened in the township over the last 10 years. The tax levy is up roughly 40% in a 10-year period of time, which is not abnormal. Better than some, worse than others. But if you look at the about four lines down, why I have state sources for operating purposes, I didn't include the after-school choice aid in that particular amount. But if you look at what's happened over the last 10 years, the retro state aid for Clinton Township has only gone up 12%. What drives the real estate taxes is the amount of aid that you're getting from the state. Now, if you were lucky enough to be in Newark, the state would be contributing about 95% of your budget. Here, that's not the case. It's about 5% of what's for a while anyway. But that's a big impact on taxes. The United States is not getting it. They also, a comment that I made to the previous district that I just left, you as board members in Clinton Township and all the other boards within the county of Huntington have to take a different viewpoint on what they're doing because you know that the taxes of its citizens are paying the biggest part of the budget. If you were a board member, you weren't taking care of it because you're providing about 95% of that budget. If you look at your expenditures for that 10-year period of time, the only ones that reflect no control is the ones you had no studying, if you will, and that would be the special education course and the related transportation. The very bottom of the page, I look back at 2004, the public tuition cost and transportation cost and compared to this year. You're up about almost $1 million over that 10-year period of time. But you as a board member, that's very little control over that. The one other item that stood out, even though it's a relatively nominal increase of about 20% over the 10-year period of time, is the plant operations and maintenance. Don't forget, we had a new school added within that 10-year period of time. So a 20% increase over 10 years is really good. Transportation is up a nominal 2.45%. So that's showing, even though there's a reduction in enrollment, a 2.5% increase over that 10-year period of time is almost ridiculous. It's just too low. So this particular exhibit, I feel anyway, shows a true reflection of what the board and administration have been doing here as trying to control costs. Now, the last exhibit is a new one this year. And I know there's always been concern that we've been thinking about the football other communities in county about taxes. Now, what's a little bit misleading about taxes, if you can see the way the exhibit reads, for example, if you look at the year ended June 30th, 2014, for 1 year that we're presently under, that's in the 2013 tax rate. So your school year, 2013-14, July 1, December, June 30th, is really the town's taxes for the year 2013. That's the way they raise the taxes. You're raising their taxes in advance, basically. But what's unique about what's happening here as far as tax rates, if you look at my tax levy analysis, I have 2 years, the year ending June 30th, 2012, and June 30th, 2013, we had reductions in taxes as far as the actual tax levy. Following it down because of the assessed values of the community changing, the tax rate actually went up. Because of the way the town assesses the property, it's constantly fluctuating. They're trying to keep a real value at all times. So your taxes are staying stable or reduced because of the assessed values changing yearly, even though you're reflecting a reduction in the actual levy that you have, the tax rate has gone up. So you're getting blamed, not necessarily by any one person, that the taxes in Clinton Township are going up for school purposes as far as the rate, but the actual levy has gone down. But if you look at the exhibit, the tax levy year-ending June 30th, 2014, your present year, is actually less than 2011. So again, there's a true reflection of an attempt to maintain control on expenditures and tax levies. And the increase for 2014 compared to 2013 is 161,000, but based on the total assessments within the community, it was that only equated to $7.50 per person who has a $100,000 house. Multiply it by whatever your assessment is. But because of the size of the township, the actual amount to the taxpayer was nominal. I don't know if any of these exhibits helped any or not, but I wanted to do the tax levy analysis different this year, and you're the only school district that I've done it for. because I know there's always a communication, not a communication problem, but there's always a concern about real estate taxes and that, and the Clayton Township Board is playing a lot. I'm in favor. Of course, I live in a different town. But again, looking at the percentage increases that I'm showing in the tax levies, there's always a reason for something. Back in 2006, the taxes went up 12%. That's because the year before, all the surplus was taken from you. You had to put it in the budget. You had none left to apply to the tax rate. And that's when you have defeated budgets and grandfathers would come in and basically take your budget theory apart and say what it should be, even though they don't have any expertise in education. In the year 2008, that was another large increase. That's when the new school went online. All the other years, looking at the percentages, they're all reasonable. And something that you might think even more than that is going to depend. I usually say, and I did, the book has a lot of stuff in it that's useless. But there's a lot of important stuff in here, but you have to know where to look and how to interpret it. Again, there's a lot in here. And if anybody has any questions, and I think that the book does have a true reflection of what's been happening here as far as the attempts that have been made to keep things under control in recent years. Okay. Again, there were only suggestions on the order report, so you can accept the order with no recommendations. That's pretty much it. Does anybody have any questions?
When you, just for perspective sake, can you mention your thoughts on how these figures have been financed in the recommendations? How long have you been in the township bar?
I was at a cocktail party recently. I was talking to somebody who knows about and he brought up the name of Harrington, which was quite a few years ago. That was the year I was appointed when he left the district.
So you've been
here a long time.
And how many other school districts do you perform these services? So then I can leave it out there. When you say that our behavior is the way it is, you are speaking from a seat of deep experience, are you not?
I would hope so, yeah.
Thank you. just for clarification, some folks are new and some folks might be listening while they're at home. I think it's important that when you say we are performing, we are acting as responsible stewards, that this is not necessarily one person in a vacuum. This is somebody who's been our order for many, many years, who's also served in that function for over 25 other school districts. And I think bearing that in mind, I for one, deeply gratifying to hear these comments. I think it speaks to the effort of our administration. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
I definitely agree with that. And just to give you an indication that some of the other districts we do deal with, we have Hunterdon Central as a client, which is a little bit bigger, not much, but a little bit bigger. And some small districts. And yes, I can definitely say that I feel that you're doing, you as a board and administration, as far as being responsible for the taxpayers' money. And that goes back to the comment earlier on. You have to do that only because of the amount of money that's supporting this budget is primarily taxes. So you have to be concerned. It's a balancing act, a very difficult one. The needs of the students and also the needs of the taxpayers at the same time.
Mr. Colopano, you had highlighted in your annual report from 2013 on page 53 the school choice aid we had in 2013. 7.28 million. We entered the program a couple years back, and the first year was a small participation, and then it's been above $1 million. This will be the second year, I believe. I just wanted to ask, as our auditor, what are your thoughts on our decision to participate in school choice. And
I think based on the results of what's happened here, it's definitely a positive. If you've been reading the paper recently, it seems like Huntington County is at the forefront of school choice because people want to be taught here in the county. We're lucky in a way that we're not too far from the other borders outside the county. So we're receiving a lot of kids that are probably out of county because of proximity to the county line. The towns on the western part of the state, a lot of them which I represent, are not doing that well with school choice aid because they're not able to get the people who want to be taught in Huntington County. It's definitely a benefit to you what you've been able to do. We had some other large increases within the expenditure areas here that you probably wouldn't have been able to do without the school choice aid. One of the areas of expenditures that I was talking about with the B2 is we had an area of expenditures that went up last year. Was in the instructional area about 4.5%, which is over 2% that you're allowed to have. But areas that were increased there were primarily in the area of special education. We had a resource room that had a large increase last year in expenditures that you wouldn't have been able to do probably. The autism program and the basic skills were the only areas that were at normal increases. That particular area, the regular instructional area was pretty much kept under control, but you did choose to put your money into those areas, but you wouldn't have been able to, I don't think, without the extra $1 million that came into the district. So yes, the money was spent wisely.
Thank you.
On the J4, you mentioned special education transportation. Are you seeing that type of increase in other school districts?
You know, I was thinking about that when I started putting this, this information together. When I first came into the district, a lot of the special education costs were within the district. So you're showing a little bit higher of an increase than the other districts are. But it looks like a lot of the work that was done last year as far as the areas of increases in expenditures, you're kind of preparing the district for a lot of, that's my interpretation anyway, for a lot of things in the future where a lot of us need to maybe get there. Because I think at one time, Clinton Township was primarily no special education tuition needs, if I remember correctly, or a nominal amount. So you're a little bit higher than others, but I'm looking at the expenditure areas that were made last year. I think it's, to me, again, it's a possible anticipation of things to come.
And, looking at the report, last year's report and this year's report here, the variances or the differences by line item year over year really appear generally insignificant. Are other boards able to do that, or is that something, and I give many plaudits to the Facilities and Finance Committee for their attention to detail and making sure that we're spending in the right areas, but is that unusual in the boards that you're seeing? Are other boards able to maintain that same discipline?
Not in all cases. The one item that I was expecting to stand out on the J4 exhibit was primarily the plan operations and maintenance. You're talking about it adding a school this size and showing an increase of 20% over a 10-year period of time. I think that's pretty remarkable, actually. And looking at the other areas, like expenditures, another one that stands out is the transportation area. That percentage increase to be only 2.5% is remarkable. Granted, you have less students to transport, but it doesn't because of the kids.
Yeah,
it's very difficult. I've had other districts that made some lot of dramatic choices that they were forced into, the Morris County District, to be specific, where they stopped completing the courtesy busing, the charging for it. I had one, the same district, got very, very involved in the native right. So a lot of those things are being done to try to control costs. Again, looking again at this 10-year comparison, adding to it the addition of a school of the size is remarkable. Now, of course, there'll be a lot of people who disagree with me, but I think it speaks for itself, actually. But you have to look at the reasons why certain things move. And percentages are not uncommon. I'm looking at some of the items. The benefit one is very common in most districts. And they're showing a 79% increase. Most of them are around 80%. But that was a very difficult one.
In the audit report up front, you also have this attendance in school. There's differences between the funding dollars and the first attendance school. What are you saying about this?
That's an excellent question. Again, I indicated I was at a previous meeting to have the people back on township. Warren County and Sussex County are late bloomers, if you will. They showed a pretty substantial increase in student population because that was a late community that was developed. Huntington County, most of the school districts, except for the high schools, are going down in population. It seems like all the kids that increased here within the local school districts are now in high school. So if that continues, the high school enrollment is going to be going down.
And you're seeing that as countywide?
Yes.
Any other questions? Mr. Colentano, thank you so much for coming out on such a cold evening and being here so late. Your charts and reports and review were outstanding, and it made it very simple for us to understand. And as Kevin said and others have said, it sort of helps reaffirm the great job that Ms. Spitzer and Dr. Clark are doing along with the facilities and finance. So thank you very much. Okay. Dr. Clark's a little cold, in case you haven't noticed.
There's a breeze from this window, so I don't know if you're feeling it, but our backs are ice cold.
Driving gloves,
we're
driving.
Okay. We have two very short committee reports.
We have to accept. Vote on the CAFR and the recommendation.
Here.
FF 116.
Right, that's where I was going. That's okay. That's okay. It's no problem. Mr. Malloy, would you just like to quickly review FF 116 and FF 117, please?
Certainly. What we're basically doing is accepting the management board edit very well, summarized by Mr. Colentano. That's action item 116. Action item 117 is accepting a corrective action plan that is essentially without recommendation. That is not a really good thing. So, with that in mind, I move finance action items 14FF 116 and 117.
So moved.
So moved, Rachel McLaughlin. Second?
Second.
Second, Mark Freda. Roll call or discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mr. Patuto?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
And our last short committee report from personnel negotiations. Mr. McTiernan, would you review your one action item, please?
Sure. Last year, the PNN committee met with Discourse for Teachers, which is an organization that can help us with our replacement for our substitute teachers. It's something that we want to seriously consider and recommend that we enter into an agreement with them to initiate some actions with them. One of the biggest concerns that we've got is with the Affordable Care Act. And in working with people, if we make an error on that as a school board, we're subject to, and this is the part I think people miss out on the Affordable Care Act's effectiveness in 2014, we are subject to fines in the hundreds of thousands of dollars for making one error on having someone that is working different hours and does not receive benefits. It is not a risk worth taking. So as we enter into this with the Source for Teachers, there'll be a balance between those substitute teachers that we're keeping within the district and managing, and that we're going to partner with the Source for Teachers to see how effective they can be, how they can support us, and keep us from having to even look at the concept or the possibility of having such a fine rendered against us. When we look at that, look at it from the perspective of, we're a very lean staff organization as far as having people that can support the many principals we have in different buildings. It's very easy to make an error in having someone come and work more hours or enough hours that they should be receiving benefits and make the error to not give them. One principal may be using a teacher and a vacancy comes or an absence comes a little bit later in the week, and a principal at another school uses that same person. Those are the type of errors that take place because you don't have the personnel necessary on a day-to-day basis to be managing that across all the principalships and for school districts. So with that, we make the recommendation that we begin to look at this organization, see how we can merge with them to make this a more effective process, and that will be, call it a growing iterative process as we go through 2014. I believe Facilities and Finance also looked at the economic numbers that were associated with that. And quite honestly, it does have also as an economic benefit for the school district. So not only do we have the possibility of saving some monies in managing the substitute process, but I think most importantly is also to avoid the potential for significant, and those fines are significant and would be repetitive. So with that, I would put that forward as a motion.
I'd just like to add something. Dan spoke very well to this topic, but what I also wanted to share is there is also an educational value to this, because one of the concerns regarding the Affordable Care Act and the tracking of substitutes and their hours has an impact on instruction in what you might not realize, all right, is a kind of odd way. In that, let's say that a classroom teacher gets the flu, all right, and they are out for 5 days. Normally, what a principal wants to do is get the same substitute in that classroom who they know well and recognize that they do a good job and keep the continuity for the kids in that classroom with a known substitute to the district and to the school and the principal that everybody feels safe and comfortable with and who knows the curriculum. The way we have to track this actually impacts our ability to do that. And that's one of our main concerns, because not only are there penalties financially, but in our, as the principals and administration looked at this, we saw that there were academic issues, instructional issues that concerned us as well. And so by using this, what we're hoping for is that we can avoid those issues where, oh gosh, we can only have this person 3 days All right? We can't bring them in for 5 days. And so we're really concerned about that. And this would bring our known teachers, they would register with Source for Teachers, and so it won't be, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. But it'll be known teachers who just register with them and are working for them as opposed to Clinton Township. There are a lot of different aspects to this. You know, I have shared some information with the district association to share what we were doing and why we were doing it. So we're also working hand in hand with them so that teachers understand what's going on. But I wanted to just be clear, it's not only financial reasons, and I don't mean that's not important, but there's an academic consideration here that I want us to consider as well.
Let's move it first.
A second?
Ms. Verderamo, second. Discussion, questions?
Two questions. The first question is, there are members that are no longer on our school board. They're listed under personnel negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason...
No, go ahead.
The reason is because it's coming out of that committee. Those were the past committees.
Doesn't matter that they're no longer here.
No. I mean, I can remove them.
But the final minutes will show.
Correct. I will remove them because we really did the work in the prior committee.
And then my next question is related to this company. You know, typically when a principal establishes a relationship with a substitute and there is a need for a long-term substitute, the teacher gets ill or goes out on maternity leave, principal to typically use a known substitute. So my question is, with this particular company, is there any kind of a guarantee that if a principal is recommending a substitute that we use frequently, that they'll be able to be successful in securing a position within this company? Or is it the company that ultimately has the say on whether or not they're going to hire this particular substitute?
That's an interesting question. It was one of our first questions to them also. The net answer to your concern is that your concern will be answered and it will be positive. How that works will be different in each situation. But if a principal has identified an individual, that person will be directed to, they want to be careful, a Source for Teachers, or possibly they would be on our payroll. It's not necessarily mutually exclusive, but assuming that they were going to work with Source for Teachers, the principal would be able to recommend that person to Source for Teachers. They would do everything to work with us to get that desired individual working on a continuous basis with the school district.
May I add as well?
Sure.
We are currently using a sub process that will be exactly the same with Source for Teachers. So those exact same subs in the same system will go directly to Source for Teachers. So we will have the same pool to select from. And
Go ahead. I just also wanted to share that there's one of the questions we asked is, if let's say that one of those subs, all right, working for Source for Teachers is somebody we want to hire long term, is there some sort of some sort of clause that would stop us from hiring them from any length of time? There is not. If they're working for them and then we want to hire them, there's no penalty. I checked that because I was concerned about that, you know, we often get good people that we see working there, and I didn't want it to be that we couldn't bring them in full time if we wanted to. So there's no penalty to that.
Their business plan is very similar to contract organizations that work with, you know, private business or enterprises. What their thought process seems to be is that even in that situation where we're going to hire someone, they're going to need to replace that first or get another body that's going to do the same type of work here anyway. Because we're going to continue to have the same absences. It's just going to be a personnel switch. So they see no harm in that.
The other thing that they do that we don't currently have access to is that they train all of the people who register with them on HIV, bloodborne pathogens, all of those mandated trainings. They take over the responsibility of making sure every substitute that we use has that training. And so they take on that role, and that's been an area that the principals and administration have talked about for a long time, because someone new to the substitute world may not have that training in terms of HIV and the new laws there. They don't send them to us without them being fully trained. So that's a good thing, too.
Like any organization, there'll be a little or a couple fits and starts as you get going. But as they get to know us, we get to know them more, the school administrators. It'll work much smoother, much better, and take an administrative burden off of the staff, both in the school and in the board office.
Our secretaries are very concerned about this and have spoken to me extensively. Because the financial penalties are so high and our secretaries do a lot of that tracking, the school secretaries, they are very concerned about this and have been, I'm not going to say panicking because they're wonderful ladies and they work hard, but certainly very, very concerned and have been calling and checking and worrying about this law because we sat down and talk to them about it and the importance, because this is the year where they track the information so that the school district, it impacts us next year, but this is the year they monitor and track what we have to do for the future.
I can ask one question, just need a clarification. So we're going to use this company, Source for Teachers, but we're also going to have subs as well?
No, except that we have people who were hired by us already, not the day-to-day per diem type subs, but substitutes who are maybe, you know, maternity leave replacements, long-term people, who we've already board approved and who are working for us. They're not going to be, we're not going to move them at this time to Source for Teachers. They're kind of grandfathered into what we're already doing.
We reviewed the financial terms in FNF and we made a recommendation, but at the time, I don't believe the district had the contract yet. The contract's come in and you guys had an opportunity to review it. Did we do attorney review?
Yes, we did have the attorney review. I sent it out to all the board members so you could look at it. The attorney did make some adjustments with some of the concerns and some clauses, as good attorneys who represent you do. And there were some questions with things that we didn't like, and they talked to Source for Teachers and negotiated those changes. So the contract that we have that I sent you has those changes in them. So we've already looked at any concerns that we might have legally and addressed them.
The new board members, have they gotten that in an email yet, or do we need to get them that contract just to take a look at?
We did not send it to
I thought.
Did they just get agendas, or did they get all the backup before?
Oh, I don't know that you got the backup. No, you didn't get the backup because we weren't allowed to
do
that.
Can we get that for them?
I think it's important to note, if it doesn't work out for some reason, there's no exit penalty.
Yes, we also checked that.
Is it a yearly contract, or is it just at the end of the year and then we renew in June?
Well, it's actually day to day because it can be canceled without penalty at any time, but it will be renewed on a yearly basis.
Any other questions?
So two board members have now seen the contract.
That's correct.
I want to make sure they're comfortable.
Right. Well, they may want to abstain or, yeah, exactly.
Opinion.
And then we also owe the new board members the other contracts that exist as well, so the current CTEA contract, CTAA contract. So that's part of one of our bylaws, is that we give you a package of all this. We'll be putting that together in the next week, and you'll have a lot of fun reading to do on the couch as it's this cold outside.
Yeah,
woohoo! Any other questions for Mr. McTiernan? Roll call.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mr. Petutto?
Abstain.
Mrs. Hand?
Abstain.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes.
And Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Oh, yes, motion carries.
Okay, moving along, the second recognition of the public, I'd like to open the floor for that. If there's anyone who would like to address the board, please come up to the mic, state your name and address, and please respect the three-minute speaking rule. Anyone? No? Okay, I'll close the floor on that. I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
A second, please.
A second?
I'll second.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
I'll get it. Okay. Nathan? Meeting adjourned at 9:50.